Well, I will try to convince you a bit more that these two supernovae can be described in the core collapse scenario. I'm not going to say that the 1A scenario is wrong. I will give an alternative point of view. I will not say that Mario is wrong at all. So this is what Mario Amui has done on 2002 IC in the Nature paper of the 2003. He has fit this supernova, which is very bright. It peaked around minus 20, so it was brighter than a normal 1A. And he tried to fit very nicely, indeed, the spectrum, the noisy one, the first one, with the 1A spectrum. Here he plot 99 EE plus a continuum. The continuum is necessary because, I mean, 1A, as I said before, is too faint, so he needs a surplus of energy, which he supposes is coming from the interaction of the ejecta with the circumstellar material that is around the exploding star. In this way, 1A spectrum plus continuum gives a very nice fit of the observed spectrum. And this is the same for the other phases. We always need a continuum, and the result is a nice fit of the observed spectra. In particular, he is able to get the silicon and the sulfur lines, which are normally seen in 1As. And so he said that this is the first clear evidence for a 1A to show hydrogen in the spectra. As I said, he needs a continuum to add a continuum to the spectra at any time, not only for the energy budget, but also for a diluted spectrum in order to decrease the spectral amplitude of the 1A lines, because you see here the contrast is much higher than this one, and this one is much higher than this, so the continuum lower this contrast. And then
was that continuum calculated to fit the observed spectrum?
It's an arbitrary continuum.
Sorry, it's arbitrary
continuum. Okay, yeah. Okay, okay. And the shape of the continuum is changing with phase as well. And of course, in this way, he gets the SED. So what you get from the observation is that there are a lot of material out there. Amui calculated between 1 and 6 solar masses of hydrogen surrounding the exploding star. This stuff is asymmetric, has a symmetric shape. And another interesting thing is that they are rare. We know now of another case, we'll talk about this later, and probably two more supernovae. So the progenitor scenario must be unlikely to form and to explode. So in one A scenario, it has been giving a lot, quite a few of progenitor systems, an exploding star inside a post-asymptotic giant branch atmosphere, 1.5 explosion supernova, and more exotics scenarios as well. But in 2004, we discovered the community, supernova community discovered a very interesting supernova, very interesting from my point of view, in the sense that I classify it soon after the discovery as a 1A, few weeks after maximum. And I said in the sequel that it was very similar to 91T. And I classified as a 1A because of this comparison. You see, the dot, this is 91T, and spectrum a few days after maximum, and this is 2004 AW spectrum that I had to classify. And you see, all the features are there. There are the silicon, there is the silicon, sulfur, weak, sulfur, calcium is there, and all the iron lines. So because of this, I classify as a 1A. We were in the middle of our RTN program, the European Supernova Collaboration Program, which aims both to observe very very intensively nearby 1A supernovae, and because of my classification we started a campaign. But there is a but. While we were observing it, I was reducing the data, the spectrum, and as time goes on, I was realizing that the supernova didn't evolve like a 1A, but it was evolving instead as a 1C. I was ready to send out a new circular, change the classification, but Alex did the first. Okay, and this is surely a 1C supernova. This is the nebula spectrum, and that's typical of 1C, 1BC supernova, nothing to do with 1A. So by sure, this is a core collapse event. But as soon as I realized that this was a 1C, I was really puzzled by this comparison, because when I saw this, I was sure that it was 1A. So I said, probably we have misclassified other 1As because of this. And my first thought went to 2002 IC. What if this guy has something to do with this this kind of 1C supernovae?
How do you normally classify, what characteristics do you classify a 1C?
1C? Well, it is not a type 2, and it is not a 1A. Or 1B.
What's the age of the spectrum?
Sorry?
What's the age of the spectrum that you were showing?
The first?
Previous one.
Looks kind of old.
This one?
Yeah, it looks kind of old.
No, this is the first spectrum of, it must be around maximum.
But for 91T, the comparison spectrum?
A few days after maximum. Yep. Because you still see silicon and the sulfur, so can it be later than 10 days after maximum, 15 days after maximum.
But how would the 1C look at that? How would the 1C have looked at
the 1C?
This one.
And the type 1A, a couple of weeks after maximum, look very similar.
Oh, okay.
That's the short form of it.
Oh,
that's why this is far.
Okay.
There are 1A's, 1C that are very much different from this. I will show you later a few cases. So as soon as I got the data set of 2004 AW, I started to play around with the data. And here you see a comparison of the 2002 IC light core with that of 2004 AW and the 99E. These guys not only is very similar to 1A spectroscopically, but also photometrically. Until 40 days after maximum, they are the two light curves are very similar. So, being a 1C, you are less concerned about homogeneity. So, when I saw this graph, I came to my mind that this first part of 2002 IC light curve could be the real light curve of a 1C, a bright event without any interaction. The shape is there, the it is much brighter than, a little bit brighter than 2004. So I suppose that from discovery up to, let's say, 30 days after maximum, this is the real light curve of 2002 IC without any interaction. The interaction starts here, and this marks the phase in which there are the spectra for this supernova. So the first two spectra, in my hypothesis, shouldn't show any sign of interaction. The third one should be dominated by interaction. Let's see if this is true. So I make the comparison with 2004 AW without now any continuum, and this is the result. We get the SED. We have to play a little bit with the reddening, but this is acceptable still. You see, you get a very nice with the calcium, iron lines, this part. Less sulfur is weak. And the silicon is there, and everything is there. Here you see the comparison in flux with the 99EE. This is the same plot of Amuis, of Marios, without continuum. So in case of 2004 AW, we don't need any continuum to get the SED, and also in order to dilute the features, they are already of the right intensity. So this is the second spectrum. Again, in my scenario, there is no interaction, and again here the fit is very good. You don't need any dilution. Here, instead, you see the 99EE comparison. Here, the iron line here are much stronger than in 2002 IC, and here you need a continuum. Branch is convinced that these type 1C show also hydrogen. So in one scenario, this broad emission could be due to H alpha, to hydrogen. Instead, in 1A supernova, the broad feature is not due to H alpha, but carbon 2, iron 2. This is the third spectrum, and without any continuum, in comparison with the 2004 AW, and here, of course, the interaction starts to dominate. You still have the broad features, but at this point, all the absorption are gone. But I don't expect to have at this epoch a resemblance between the two spectra. However, I tried to compare the late time spectra of 2002 IC, taken 200 days after maximum or explosion, with that of a sample of 1C, supernovae, 1C, and 1A. Apart from the presence of H alpha, I can recognize all the features. This is oxygen one. The magnesium is there. So, and I see a resemblance between the late time spectrum of 2002. I see more with the 1C supernovae spectrum than with 1A. By the way, the 2002 IC spectrum at 200 days is very similar to the spectra of other two supernovae, 99E, 97CY, which has been associated to GLBs. And 1A are not progenitor of 1Bs. Of GLBs.
Not very conclusively connected.
Not conclusively, yes. I agree. This is a posteriori connection. Okay. Let's move on to the other supernova. These are the data of this supernova has been published by Ordering et al. 2006. You see here at the phase of 71 days, the two supernovae are almost identical. Again, here he tried to fit the features with the 1A spectra. In this case, he has to use 91T. Can you see it? I didn't do it. I took it from the paper. Why he took 91T? Because the first spectrum is a poor continuum. You can see very few features over there. And to me, these featureless continuum is all but a 1A spectrum. Instead, at later phases, the fit is reasonably good. There are some differences here, but it's acceptable. Again, here you need a continuum at all phases, like in 2002 IC, because this supernova is still brighter than 2002 IC. It peaks at minus 20.5 more or less. So you definitely need a continuum. So before showing you my scenario, I want to open a short parenthesis, and in order to illustrate to you the result of this paper that Stefano Valenti is working on and will be submitted very soon. This is a worldwide collaboration, a lot of groups are involved, and we got a lot of data on this, and it will be one of the best one C and ever observed. It is a 1C. Here you see the bolometric light curve. We got it a little bit before peak, and it's quite bright. It's as bright as 98 BW. And here it is the photospheric evolution, spectroscopic evolution in photospheric phases. You see, the first spectrum is in between hypernovae and normal 1C. it is a broader, it shows a broader feature than normal 1C, but not as broad as Ivanovi. But Stefano Valenti started to compare the 2003 JD spectra with a sample of 1C supernovae. Here is an example of this comparison at 2 weeks after maximum. But he soon realized that the comparison is not very good. It's much better if you align, if you stretch the phase temporally. In the sense, if you compare 91i, take the spectrum of 91i taken 1 day after maximum with that of, for example, 2004 AW, 2 weeks after maximum, the comparison is much, they are almost the same. And this is true also for Ivanovi. Of course, you don't get a tight match as for less powerful 1A. So there seems to be a temporal stretch. Is this working also for photometry? There is a stretch factor that homogenizes the light curves. Yes, there is. Here you see a sample of 1C normalized to BW, light curve, V light curve, and you see the light curve are almost identical up to 30 days after maximum, and then there is they start to deviate each other. These remember the stretch factor used in 1C, in 1A. In fact, we went forward and look for to see if this stretch factor is correlated with luminosity. This Mario Modias is doing a similar kind of work, and he presented the result during the ASPEN meeting. And we also find a similar result. In the sense, the crosses are the 1As. So 1As populated this part of the diagram with the usual relation, Philip relation. And 1C tend, anyhow, to populate the same part of the region. But there are outliers. So some populate this, I don't say that there is a relation, populate the same part of the region, but there are outliers. In particular, this one, which is 87ES, which is a kind of hypernova. Anyway, but keep this in mind. With this result, I went back to 2005 GJ, and start to play with light curves. I stretch 1C light curve, trying to fit the first part of 2005 GJ light curve, and I found that the stretch 2006 AJ light curve fits the point not too bad. So, and the stretch factor I use was 2.76, and respect to 98 BW is 1.66. These marks the epochs of the two spectra that we have for this supernova. But first, I want to show you. So, okay, here in the hypothesis that these are the real, again, the real 1C supernova of 05 GY, the first spectrum is not affected by interaction, while the second one is affected by interaction, and interaction counts by one magnitude, more or less.
But that's not a really good fit, because the points aren't anywhere near.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. In this hypothesis, with the stretch factor I found for 98 BW and the peak magnitude minus 30.5, the point goes here, which is not a bad place to go. So let's move to the spectroscopy. Here there is the first spectrum of 2005 GJ. I compared it with the 2006 AJ. I remember you that this is a 1C supernova connected with a GRB or X-ray flash, and this is a comparison with the 2003 JD. To get this bump in the right position, I have to slow down the 2006 AJ by 10,000 km per second. Instead, this is a rest frame.
This one.
You see, the stretch factor I found spectroscopically is not very different from that I found from spectroscopy. Here, it is the comparison with the second spectrum. Here, I have to take into account interaction. If I assume a gray interaction, a constant integration interaction contribution in respect to 2003 JD, I get this fit. If I assume a continuum and add the continuum to 2003 JD spectrum, I get the blue line, which is a very nice fit to the 2005 GJ spectrum. This is the spectrum of the 2006 AJ. Again, slowed down by that amount of velocity. In this 1C scenario, this is the cartoon I get. We have a massive exploding star, and expand the ejector, which travel about 5 × 10^15 centimeters before hitting the circumstellar material, assuming a wind velocity of 2,000 km per second and a maximum expansion velocity for GJ of 16,000 km per second.
That's from the time when the interaction starts.
Yeah.
So
yep.
That's just the time times 16,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Sure. And with this parameter, we find that the mass loss ended 8 years before explosion. The mass inside the shell is quite a lot, and the mass loss rate is also very high. And this, to me, seems very much like an LBV outburst. But do we have other cases? Of course, yes. okay, this is... Another supernova we are following, or we have followed it because now it's gone, at least in the optical. It's still bright in the infrared. It is a quite bright, again, object. This is its hard light curve. We classify it like type 1b. With the narrow lines, with narrow helium lines. I will show you the spectrum later. And we recognize that this supernova is very similar to these other two. Unfortunately, 2006 JC has been taken after maximum, so we don't know anything about the rise time. But the others that have a post-maximum similar spectra rises very quickly, too quickly for Nikkei. This is the spectrum, the spectra. This is the classification spectra. This one is 14, plus 14 spectrum. You see, there are a broad feature typical of 1C supernova is superimposed to very narrow, no, not very narrow helium lines. Here you see better. This is the same spectrum. overposed to a 1C, a normal 1C supernova spectrum. Here you see the broad lines and the narrow lines and the blue continuum, which is not seen in normal 1BC. So we have interpreted this as a massive explosion inside a circumstellar material rich of helium. The very interesting thing of this supernova is that we have seen an outburst 2 years before the supernova went off. I think it was a Japanese amateur found it this transient for a few days, and it peaked at -14.1. It was not announced in the Sicola. It was put in the unconfirmed supernovae pages, because the seabed has an unconfirmed supernova. Nobody take care of it, and there is no spectrum of it, unfortunately.
You don't see it for a few days.
A few days. But we went back and we demonstrated that they are in the same position. So, and this is the first time we see some activity in a supernova progenitor before explosion. Sorry?
What kind of galaxy is
this? Well, all this kind of supernova tends to explode in a regular faint galaxy, like the progenitor of GRB.
Oh, I'm not a
and nice little levels. Well, similar. Mm. So, which are the possible scenarios for this kind of outburst? In which, if you believe that 2002 IC-like objects are core collapse, they study goes in this group. Can be a giant burst of luminous low variable. Yes, but LBV are not supposed to be supernova precursors, unless you believe in Alex Filipenko group that is foresee a new mechanism for massive stars to explode its pair instability. They are calling this a kind of exposure for displaying in the exceptional bright 2006 GY. Can be some kind of LBV-like activity in Wolf Rayet, but we never have seen this before. And in any case, the Wolf Rayet that we are talking about are still losing hydrogen and helium, so they are younger Wolf Rayet. We know that the lifetime of Wolf Rayet is thousands of years and not a few years. Can be a binary system. Well, an LBV can do the burst, and an evolved companion, Wolf Rayet companion, can explode as a 1C. But it is a very fine-tuned system. No.
Okay.
We don't know. Probably not.
Okay, but it's not observed.
Not observed. Well, I finish just with a provocation. Here is the light curve of 2006 GY, taken from the work of Schmidt et al., which is going to be appear soon. You see? Massimo called it a bestione, which means a big beast. And the light curve is a peak very high, it is very broad. And if we do the following game, we stretch 98 BW to fit this, and the fitting is good. It's a provocation. The point goes here. Okay. Thanks a lot. I don't believe it, but there are infinity points where it can go, where it goes there.
Well, I think it's a very interesting question of whether the objects that people have worried about as type 1A with circumstellar stuff might really be 1Cs or something else.
Yeah.
As that was the point that you made. I think that is really worth taking seriously. What we don't know is the full range of the phenomenon for the 1Cs, and that's also what you've shown.
So they are
quite different from one another.
There could be different genitals, different genes.
Right, so there may be things mixed in together, which we will eventually learn to separate. One thing that Marianne has done in her thesis is to look at the broad-lined ones and the narrow-lined ones separately. And so I think that's a useful thing to do, and also to think about the ones that have the gamma ray bursts separately from the other broad line 1Cs. And you know, that's a little more uncertain because they're selected in such different ways. But anyway,
you can
look at them separately, and I think that is helpful, and it can help sort this out a little bit. We don't see any relation between the luminosity and the shape of the light curve for the...
Inside each group.
Yeah, except for the ones that are associated with the gamma ray bursts. So, you know, I think there's a lot more to be learned in the sample. I'll show you what we've got.
Yes.
You know, maybe this afternoon we should.
How would that affect the 1As, though? You know, you go to this distant sample. If there are misidentifications where, you know, you're looking at this thing at maximum, right, close to maximum, it's just like a 1A. But then had you followed it for longer, you would have said, no, it's not a 1A. How is that going to influence what people think about the...
When you have only one spectrum, you are dangerous.
But Stéphane Blondin showed you was a kind of impartial way of assessing how well you know whether it's a 1A or a 1C. If you have information about the age, I think it helps a lot. And because you do have to kind of cheat a little bit. You have to use the 1A at age 2 weeks compared to the 1C.
Yeah.
That's when you really get confused. But if you have good information on the age, then you're not allowing yourself to match it up with the wrong.
These two, the companies I show you, they have similar things at the end. They are not.
So I think when we have a complete library, you know, we have lots of them at different phases, then we'll know better how to answer that question. It's something to worry about, but they are quite rare. They are rare in these same. They just.
This funny supernova, which was the one with the precursor to I mean they're all
2006,
but which had a 2 year before
JC.
You know, there is this model by Chris Fryer and Stan Woosley where they say that the hypernovae are made by the merger of a helium star and a black hole. Now this merge, if you have a binary, there's a black hole and a helium star. If the helium star already is evolved, let's say something, a little carbon in the core or something, and you merge it, you certainly will get a common envelope and ejection. I don't know how many years it will take before it will make a gamma ray burst.
But do you get exposure?
It looks, I mean, what you get out of their model, if you read their paper of a few years
ago. But do you get a nickel at the end?
Something comes out like a 1C, is their conjecture, and something like the Woosley hypernova model comes out. And yeah, you would. I don't know what the delay time of the two is, but it's pretty close after one another, actually. So it could be only a few years. That paper has been published in APJ 6 years ago or something.
So, well, the first Erdős was not supernova-like.
It was the merger of this binary. Helium star and a black hole merging, and then you eject it through the envelope.
Atmospheric expansion, then the receiving.
So Chris Fryer will be extremely happy with your supernova gains.
There are a handful of them where we see these narrow helium lines, right?
And I never believed that model, actually, but now that you've come up with this, it looks very beautiful.
Well, there must be some cases where there is a lot of helium in the neighborhood, like the cartoon that you showed.
Yeah.
So Chris Fryer will jump up and down and say,
well, just because that situation exists doesn't mean that was the cause of it, but
Is a way to do it.
Yeah.
And then you get still this, if it's a rapidly rotating black hole, it will form this torus, it will make a gamma ray, a hypernova, you may not be seeing when you're outside the beam, you just see your supernova.
We look at in the literature for something explaining
the show you the paper.
Is there any?
I never believed it. It's outlandish, I must say, but now it becomes very believable, I must say.
Is there any color information of the pre-burst?
Color?
Yeah.
From color. Amateurs don't use
filters.
So I know very little about supernovae, as it's probably clear now, but I know that for 98BW, there was very prompt, very strong radio emission. Do you get that in 1As as well? Do you get radio emission? Is that a way to distinguish the 1As from the 1Cs?
We also don't see it from 1Cs most of the time.
That is the argument against.
That's the argument that these are not just off-axis things like the gamma ray burst, where eventually you would see the isotropic radio emission. That's what Lewis just thought.
Well, eventually, I mean, this was really soon after.
I mean, like days.
Yes.
Yeah, but it may have still been beamed, you know, because it was relativistic stuff. That is what Kulkarni's model and so.
If you waited long enough.
Yeah, if you wait long enough, you must.
So she has those upper limits for lots of these things.
Right.
Because the idea that you're discussing is just the right thing to test.
Right.
And she did a lot of observations of 1Bs and 1Cs and 2Ns to see when you see them. Most of the time you do not.
Mm-hmm.
But this precursor is really amazing.
Yeah, this is fantastic.
So it's a single epic observation, that was it, for the precursor. It's one data point.
No, no, wait a minute. They follow the...
It's a little by order.
I don't have it. It is in our...
This is the type of thing that pan-stars, LSST, you know, is much more likely to find systematically. So if precursors are common...
Yeah, we'll throw them out. We'll say, gosh, that's not a 1A.
No.
He'll come back to it, you know. Then that data is there. He finds supernova.
But the KITE program, that's looking at all these galaxies on a daily basis, isn't it? Or a couple of days. I mean, they should be able to pick it up as well.
Yeah, but there you're talking about a much smaller total number of supernovae than these big, wide, all-sky things. So the rare thing, and these do seem to be rare, is more likely to be caught.
Sure.
Yeah. And so I think the real lesson is you should keep your mind open.
Absolutely.
We have not discovered everything. Your eyes open. We have not discovered everything. And these things, which we maybe are not, you know, we may be lumping together things that are really different, but we'll find that out eventually, right?
As soon as we discover a lot of supernova each year, you find these beasts that were impossible before.
Right. If they're only 1%, then you're not finding 100 a year, you know.
Yeah.
this galaxy with the precursor, there must be better observations of that galaxy than the ones you showed. I mean, there must be an HST emitter or something like that. I mean, is there any indication that there's a cluster there or a star-forming region or something?
I don't think that there is anything, because the author of the paper is Steve Smart, that he knows about it.
Oh, that's an HST observation. observation that
I think they are going to take deep images of the galaxy.
But this is not in this program that he takes images of galaxies before they explode.
No, but this is an anonymous galaxy.
Is there a preprint of this paper? Is there a preprint of this paper? Which is
It's still under embargo, but it is appeared on SOPH, yes.
It has appeared on
yes.
Oh, I can find that.
A month ago. But I will give you. I will give you the number
because I would like to forward it to Chris Fryer because he must know.
Well, before we end, I mean, this type of thing is exactly what we're looking for tomorrow, right? Because we had so much discussion about some of the specific supernovae that you've been talking about here, and this whole issue of 1As versus 1Cs has been a major theme with many different talks. So if people here have some more insight about it beyond what we said today, I think it would be quite nice.
I didn't have it here.
NC. It's way harder on the side.
You see?
In the short column.
On the right hand side.
What? Oh, yeah.
It was 703 something.
It has another number. The number is this one.
You'll find it.
Are there any more questions? If not, let's thank Stefano.
And may I remind you of my email of Tuesday.